tragedy struck, Justin, this week. You know what? I'm actually going to take that back.
No?
With the current world...
Oh, okay. Levels of tragedy.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say it like that. Let me just cut the pretense here. Went over to my parents. I helped them paint their shed yesterday. Got covered in paint, which was awesome.
Like an outside shed?
Yeah. Are there inside? Are there indoor sheds?
That was a dumb question, I realized.
No, perhaps there are. Mm. If they are, I'm not aware of them.
No, it was a dumb question because there's, you know.
But my dad made bratwurst, and I was looking at them, and I had them, and I liked them a lot. But the whole time I'm shaking my head, I'm like, this doesn't count. This doesn't count at all.
I'm sorry that happened to you. That is a tragedy. Okay. For your hot dog count. My hot dog count, I'm currently at 108.
Yeah, I'm at 63.
Yeah, you're
making my way.
You're making your way there. I mean, I had 8 in a week. That's a good week. Like,
that's a great week. A solid week. We're all on board that that's a great week. Yeah, yes.
Like, nothing I can do about that. But I've eaten a lot. I've eaten a lot of food. I want to just go over like some of the foods that I've eaten and had.
Please.
I forget the name of the pizza oven, but we made. So I was in. We had a family trip. I was in Lake Geneva. And we planned like 3 meals a day, and that was a lot, way too much for what we needed. So,
because what do you normally eat? Real quick, can I ask, like, how many meals are you eating a day? Are you like a two? I'm a twoer.
So
I'm a twofer.
There, it depends. I technically might eat 3 times a day, but like I will have like mini bite for breakfast, like whether one of those packets of oatmeal or like a quarter cup of oatmeal. Or like some toast, peanut butter, and a banana or something like that. Like nothing like I would call a meal, but like it's like it's a meal for some. And then for lunch, I'll eat 2 hot dogs. Pretty standard. Can't go wrong with that. And then I'll have dinner, like whatever my dinner is, right? So like I guess I'm a one actual meal a day. If we don't count the hot dogs as a meal, that's like a quick little, like, again, another quick bite. But this one, it's like 3 like hearty meals, like things that were planned out. So we started, and this is where our first mistake was. We made pizza on these like little portable pizza ovens. We had 2 pizza ovens, and then we made pretty much like 12-inch pizzas each. There were 10 of us.
So you're making that's
a lot, right?
That's some pizza.
So that is 10 pizzas, 8 slices each, and we did not each eat 8 slices. So we started off with a surplus of food, and then the fridge was just filled with pizza. And like, obviously we would share pizza and you could try someone else's pizza if you wanted, but we had like 80 slices of za that we had to do something. So the fridge was already filled with that. That's how the trip started, right? Then for breakfast the next day, we were charged, my wife and I and her dad were charged with making breakfast. So we made French toast, and I'm pretty good at making French toast. So we had French toast, we had fruit, we had bacon, we had sausage. We had a lot of the good stuff that you'd want for French toast. And we went crazy with the bread. We used like Texas toast. We used this like nice, like kind of like, almost like eggy kind of bread. And then we used like a nice, like sourdough. We had some good French toast. And again, I'm pretty good at making French toast. Just going to say that. So we had that. And then we went out to lunch, and at lunch that we had some like drinks and some appetizers and stuff like that, because this was about 3 o'clock that we went out to lunch.
Sure.
We had dinner reservations at 6.
Eesh. Okay. Dude, this is exactly what happened to me in the Philippines, where it's just like eat and eat and eat and eat. And you're like, huh?
And it gets,
and like, I'm not recovered from lunch when it's like dinner time. And I'm like, but
it's like pretty rough. So then we had like all those, like, and we were in Wisconsin, so it's a lot of fried food, like cheese curds, like fried stuff. And then for dinner, I tried to eat something light. So I had chicken skewers, but it's Wisconsin, so you know, it's covered in butter and shit. And then for dinner, you know, if you want it, like for after that, you could have any snacks. I had some jelly beans throughout the evening and some Nilla wafers. Sure. I mean, you know, I live large.
I get it. You're on vacation.
So I ate more, and then the next day we went out to this this place that used to be an old brothel, and they had like this like brunch with like bottomless mimosas and like a fancy brunch. Like this was like a $50 a plate brunch, so it's like a little fancy place. And like for our seats, they actually just set us in a lounge. There was like 3, like a table, and then like 2 kind of like little like end card table things kind of set up with like these like fancy chairs, and we were just like positioned around a square room. Like we didn't all sit together necessarily, but had the room to ourselves, and it was kind of cool. But like, and the food was really good. They had like prime rib and like fish and like all the breakfast for breakfast for like this. So I ate a lot there. And then it was like, we were supposed to eat sandwiches for lunch. So like, then we had, wanted to have some, I couldn't eat the sandwiches. And then we went on this boat cruise, and then there were, it was just so much food, Peter. And I don't feel great. I'm going to be honest with you.
Justin, that is okay. What I want you to do is I want you to sit back, relax. I'll guide us through this. Okay. I got a lot to say this week, between Clair Obscur, between Oblivion and the rest. You just chime up when that tum's hurting, and I will guide us through all this. Does that work for you?
If I feel bad, you'll hear me. I'll eat some jelly beans. That'll make me feel better.
Have you played A Boy and His Blob?
No. Is that what I am?
Okay. So in A Boy and His Blob, you feed the blob jelly beans, and then the jelly bean, depending on what the jelly bean is, it transforms.
Oh, okay. So like, what if I have a sweet tart jelly bean, the best type of jelly bean? What would I turn into? A sweet tart?
Boy and His Blob jelly bean list.
I'm sure that's not one of the...
So what did you call it?
It's a sweet tart jelly bean.
Sweet tart. Do you think that's like cola, would you say? Or like...
It's like... It's a little bit like a tarty flavor.
You got apple, banana, berry, bubblegum, coconut, cola, cream, grape, licorice, mint, pear, punch, root beer, strawberry,
there's a grape flavor. There's a grape flavor.
Let's see here. So the grape turns you giant. So
hell yeah!
It's a box! Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 240. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, I know your belly's full. I'm not even gonna ask you how you're doing, so you save your breath. Okay,
all right, thank you. I appreciate that
you're doing well. You had a lovely vacation. It's a good problem to have, to excess of food. Like, what a wonderful problem to have.
I know. We are privileged to do this.
I'm jealous. I'm quite jealous, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, because you're actually...
I had some bratwurst, but...
I mean, you're caring about what you eat currently, right?
Sometimes... You know, it's interesting, Justin. You care so much, and then you have a day where you're just like, fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, mixed.
I had
today I am.
Like a couple years ago, I was like, I need to like get myself in a better shape because we are having like a friend pool party with like a bunch of our friends and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to come out looking like a squishmallow at this thing. I want to at least tighten myself up a little bit. Here's the funny thing. Didn't even end up swimming. Shirt stayed on the whole time.
And I can imagine that you're like trying to like get it in that direction. Like,
come on, who's swimming?
It's hot out. Yeah, it's pretty. Anyone else kind of hot? Anyone else want to take a dip? Everyone's like, no, I'm good. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, we don't need to do that. Yeah, no, it's fine.
That's got to be an I think you should leave sketch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Anyway, just wanted to give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news. Switch pre-orders went live on Thursday. And you and I had an experience with that.
We did.
The Oblivion remaster exists and is here. And Clair Obscur Expedition 33 has taken over the gaming world. We are going to talk about those three headlines and more. But before we do, I would like to tell our listeners they can join us on Discord. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Nolan, GKS, and Josh Durham for our additional 30-minute bonus episodes that come out every single week. We have more than 240 of these fucking things, right? I think, or more than 100. No, not 240. More than 150 of them. And if you're interested in that, patreon.com/hitboxpod. If not, that's fine. You can follow us on Blue Sky. We're off Twitter. We're on Blue Sky. Friendship with Twitter ended. Blue Sky's my dad now.
Oh.
You can follow us there at Hitbox Pod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Let's talk about the first thing that I think I have the least to say about, and it is the Until Dawn movie. Metacritic has scored a 49. Let's just take a look at what Rotten Tomatoes has to say about this thing. You know, truth be told, Justin, I forgot that they were doing one of these. I think I had seen one trailer for this and I was like, oh, no, thank you. It seems like it's kind of cute in that it, like, to my understanding, it's like all of the kids are like getting killed every single night by different like horror monsters. And their like goal is to like survive. And they keep like waking up and being like, after they get killed, and they're like, oh my gosh, like we got to survive, which I think is cool. Cause at least it's like playing on the concept of what Until Dawn the game is. It's got a 51% on the tomato meter. After 83 reviews, do you have any interest in this?
No, I mean, I'm not really one for these. I mean, it really seems like they took an idea and they just kind of like went with it. And like, I mean, how familiar are you with like the writing process in Hollywood?
I guess I don't know what you mean.
Like the script writing process, like how they get made?
Oh, not particularly, so I don't think.
I'm pretty sure this is one of those things, because this has kind of been like out as being a potential movie for quite some time. Like, not that I knew this was going to be there, but it's one of those things where I'm sure draft number one started being pretty much in line with the game, and then other people take over and things just start like morphing it to turn it into something very different from what it actually is intended to be. So even if the initial intention was for it to be an Until Dawn movie, the end product becomes this slant of what it takes to make a movie instead of like keeping the creative vision of the original alive.
Yes.
That's why you get something that is called Until Dawn that is not really about Until Dawn, because it's not like they're sitting here making these changes to like better the source material. You know what I mean? Like, it's really not even the source material.
It's interesting too, because like, now that you mention it, yeah, I do know, like, you know, there are so many of these, like, it feels like every week they're like, hey, new video game adaptation is being in the works. Like, they just announced, did you see this? It Takes Two, although that one is apparently in the works and has the fucking Rock attached to it, which you couldn't make me see that.
Yeah, right.
She threatened to kill me. No, the other one, Split Fiction is
jeez, yes, you forgot. Yeah.
In the works. And Sydney Sweeney is like apparently starring in it, to which I saw that and I turned to Elena and I was like, does she ever just say no to a role? Like, why is she in all of this garbage?
Peter, it's called money.
It's called money. And it's called, if you're in 9 movies a year, you probably make some money, huh?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I'm sure she would probably be Zoe, right?
I have to imagine.
Like, I mean, obviously the hair color makes sense, but like, I mean, she could also play like a moody, like kind of like cool person who has a dark past. You know what I mean?
I guess, but I don't think she's that good of an actress. I know. Sorry, Sweeney heads. I saw Anyone But You and I was thoroughly unimpressed. And then I saw Madame Web and I was like, well, she's certainly not better than this.
You still haven't watched White Lotus, right?
No, I have not. Is she in that?
She's in White Lotus season 1 and plays a very convincing bratty teenager.
That seems to be what she's good in. I've not watched her other show that I have fucking no interest in. What is that called?
Euphoria?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If it's between Euphoria or watching It Takes Two with The Rock, I'm picking It Takes Two.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But apparently she's good in that, but it's just like, she can do that one thing. I don't know. No idea. I don't know anything about it. I'm not going to see Until Dawn. Thank you very much.
I might play it again. My wife has been talking about playing the game again, but like, I don't think I will be.
I wonder, like, okay, so you know how the Last of Us TV show was a ad, not actually, but like, there was a synergy between The Last of Us Part 1, the remake, and The Last of Us TV show, and when The Last of Us TV show came out, sales for that game, like, spiked, right? And that was the intention, right? Obviously, of course, like, that was what the goal was. And so when the Until Dawn remake, do you remember that came out? Remember that existed?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, I do.
Like, the goal is obviously that when this movie comes out, that people are like, well, is there a game I can play? And then they see, oh my gosh, a game came out like 6 months ago. I'm going to buy that. But I wonder how much this, a movie like this moves the needle in terms of a game like Until Dawn. You know what I mean? Like The Last of Us, that's an HBO prestige drama. Of course it's going to set, you know, move some sales for the game. Is like a shitty, like intentionally kind of shitty and campy horror movie going to move the needle for Until Dawn sales? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, like, I think...
Agreed.
Maybe if the intention was to have that synergy from to begin with, but it does not seem like that was, like, part of the intention with this. And I think, like, with The Last of Us, kind of helps that Neil Druckmann is on the creative team for one way or another, because that ties them a little bit more directly with the studio rather than this. Again, I'm not sure about this development history, but, like, for this to turn into this kind of movie that is very different from the game, my assumption would be that they are not working closely. It is not like one of those things that is coming to life. But again, I'm not an expert on this.
It's funny you mentioned that, Justin. This is a tweet from Hazador Gaiman. I'm just going to read verbatim here. Until Dawn, video game writers aren't credited in the film and they are not happy about it, says former Sony Interactive Entertainment / PlayStation narrative director. So this is a post from LinkedIn by Kim McAstill. And she writes, as a former Sony Interactive Entertainment and PlayStation narrative director who was firmly told that the IP I personally created would never be credited to me as I was salaried, no royalties, no control, no ownership, no acknowledgement, I am struggling with the difference between Neil Druckmann's favor and that of others in your company. I've just left Until Dawn, where the film director, writers, etc., were all credited. But instead of you mentioning the leading game devs who created this iconic game you're clearly so proud of, you just wrapped it as based on the Sony game. They spent years breaking their brains to make something incredible, and the world deserves to know their names. Instead, no credit, no thanks, no honor. Why should IP creators keep working for you? Film and TV, which is grotesque at the best of times, still own the need to note the importance of credit. Why won't you? I think that makes sense, right? I mean, all they do is they bring Neil Druckmann out at the fucking end of every single one of these episodes of The Last of Us. And when it comes to all these other adaptations, like the creators and creators behind the original stuff are just like nowhere to be found. It's kind of weird.
Who is the like company that did this? I mean, obviously this is probably a Sony project, but I'm sure they worked with someone else, right? Or no?
Let me see. Until Dawn movie. This was created by, this was distributed by Sony Pictures. So that's a bad start. And production company Screen Gems, PlayStation Productions.
That's ironic. Vertigo
Entertainment. Yeah, so this is 100% who, like they absolutely could have done this, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, when they're making these contracts and they're selling the script rights, is it a situation in which they're selling off the script rights to be written out of the house, even if they're the ones producing it? Or is it a situation where they're sitting there writing it and hiring the people to write it? And I know it's like done by Sony Pictures and stuff like that, because, and I'm not defending them for not putting the credits in the thing, but it's like probably one of those things that, as this movie shows, was so far apart from the original source material that at a certain point, it was not so much, are we doing the same thing? It's more the fact that, are we getting this thing out to begin with?
Yeah, I think you're right about, like, you know, how does this resemble whatever? But at the end of the day, and also that, you know, even this woman here, Kim McAskill, recognizes, like, you know, I was personally told that I would never get credit for this outside. Like, they could do whatever they wanted with this because I was salaried. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but, like, I still think that she is right by saying, like, you know, even though they can do that, I think it's shitty to do that if they are not going to do that to everyone. You know what I mean? Like, stop dragging Neil Druckmann out and making him the face of The Last of Us if you're not going to do that for the other people who work on your games like this. You know what I mean?
And on top of that, too, like, how hard is it, like, if you're basing something on material, no matter what, just to give people the credits?
Just to put them in the credit. That's the thing. It's like, I don't even think she wants to be, like, dragged to the premiere or whatever. I mean, like, that's not the way it comes across to me. Like, it comes across me, like, just put my name in the credits. You know what I mean? Like, I created, I wrote this.
But also on top of that, though, this is the other fucked up thing about Hollywood. Putting them in there, like, there is a certain amount of, like, monetary connection with this kind of stuff. Like, if you're a writer credit versus, like, you know, like, and stuff like that, too. But again, none of the technical asterisks make a difference for me. It's the fact that you make something, you should be credited for it in some way, even if there's a way to, like, put your fucking name in there. You know, and also, you know, like, whatever it is, there's a way to do that. And that just kind of sucks that doesn't happen, no matter the justification or reason from the legal people with the money.
I agree. So there you go. That's Until Dawn, the movie, never to be discussed on this show again, I'm sure. next up in the Metacritic Roundup is Days Gone Remastered. On the PS5, this scored an 80, and it is unscored on the PC. 7 critic reviews gave this an 80. Justin, this is scored significantly better than Days Gone original, right?
Well, no, 71, but this is based on 6 critic reviews.
Oh, yeah, versus 122. Right. So there you go.
But the thing that is interesting is the fucked up thing about Metacritic here is that the 6 critics gave it an 80. The 221 users gave it a 9.1.
This game has such a weird fan base. It has such a weird, odd fan base who... Now, I've never played it, so I'm speaking out of my ass a little bit. But you have played it.
Mm-hmm.
And my question for you is this. This is like a fine game, right? Like, it's fine.
Yeah, I would say, like, again, with my skewed version of the world, I would say this is an 8.
Sure. But would you say it's, like, remarkable? Or would you say it's, like kind of unexceptional? Like, it's fine. It's a good game. But yeah, like,
it's an 8. I mean, there's good qualities about it. Like, for me, like, I think there's the story's engaging. A little cringe and overstays its welcome are my biggest critiques to it. And the coolest gameplay mechanic is hidden behind hour 30.
Right, it's like at the end, right, with the big hordes and stuff. And it's like in all the trailers and stuff. It's like, oh, this is cool. And like,
when is that going
to
happen?
Never get to it. Just like the fans of this game series, though, are just like convinced that this is like the best game of all time. I haven't played it, so I can't say. Knowing what I know about it, I think it's probably accurately rated. You know what I mean? As like a 70 on here. Like, I bet I would like it less than that. But also, I skew low with how I feel about, you know, game scores and stuff. But... yeah, I don't know. I don't know why this game has like garnered this sort of like fan reception. You know what I mean?
I mean, even so much, like, I think it's the same on both sides. Like, it is such a divisive game for so many reasons. Like, why is this the one that people choose to be the divisive game? You know what I mean?
To be honest with you, I think that it is because of the way that like the original director has been like shitty about it. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, yeah. I don't remember the things he said, but I know that he is like constantly just like every, like as often as he can, just like putting himself in the news to be shitty about one thing or another. And people seem to really latch onto that for whatever reason. But are you picking up Days Gone Remastered?
Wait, is this a remake or a remaster? Because that matters.
This is a remaster.
And we mean it. It's a fucking remaster.
They mean it this time, yes. Director's cut, as they used to say, for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely not. And not in the terms of the fact that I think this is like a bad game. It's that I enjoyed my time with the first one. And if my biggest critique is that it overstayed its welcome, I can't invest more time into it one way or another. But
yeah, I also feel like for me, with a lot of these PS4 games that have been getting remastered, like Horizon Zero Dawn, same thing. If I'm ever going to go back and replay these, or like, I guess, play Days Gone for the first time, I have the PS4 version from the PlayStation Plus collection. There is no reason for me to have to play the PS5 version of this. It is fine. You know what I mean? Like those versions are going to be, I'm never going to notice a difference. You know what I mean?
Is it still in the PlayStation Plus collection?
Well, it was that thing. The PlayStation Plus collection was, if you had PlayStation Plus when you bought a PS5 for the first year, there were like 20 games on there. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and you had to like download them to keep them or something like that.
Before the like subscription service, it wasn't a subscription service, but like before that thing ended, you had to download them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, I have this, so I would never buy this. And especially for a game that seems like I wouldn't really like it that much. Like, I didn't even buy Last of Us Part 2 Remastered.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, well, here's the interesting thing. So I will be able to upgrade for $10, but you will not be able to, because if you claim the version from the PS Plus collection, they don't allow you to upgrade the $10 version.
I'm really glad that it works like that and that it's so easy to understand.
I know. It's so, there's so many like qualifications, or not qualifications, I can't think of the word right now. So many, but if
it's like exceptions,
yeah, exceptions and stuff like that to it that make it confusing. I think just in general, and there's some times too when I'm going to buy something, and this is not just Days Gone, when I'm going to buy anything on the PlayStation Store specifically, because I buy more things on the PlayStation Store than Xbox because Game Pass. But like, the thing about like buying a game is I'm sometimes confused with what version I'm buying. And they've been doing that shitty thing right now where the standard version is usually the version that's more money when you're going to purchase something. So you kind of have to go out of your way to buy the standard version. And then they make you feel guilty for not buying their actual upgraded version.
I wrote a piece. I don't know when it's coming out, but it's just like digital deluxe editions are the bane of the games industry, where it's like, they clutter up storefronts so you can't find their base game, and then when you look at what's actually included, it's like 5 skill points, and it's like, cool, I'm gonna get those anyway.
Yeah,
or it's like armor that you outclass instantly. Cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Not worth it.
Never. Yeah, so there you go. Days Gone Remastered. Justin, let's talk about the Oblivion remake.
Before we do, Obliviate.
Before we do, I wanted to address something that I'd seen sort of pop up on the internet, and I just wanted to mention this. So in April, at the beginning of the month, the BDS movement, which is an organization that helps organize boycotts for against companies that are funding Israel. And it's genocide of Palestinians, put Microsoft on their boycott list. Specifically, they call consumers to boycott Xbox branding and Xbox as a brand, because it's something that it's like the most consumer facing facet of Microsoft's sort of stuff. Obviously, they have like Windows and stuff, but like, you can't boycott Windows. It's too ingrained in, you know, like functionality and stuff like that. But consumer spending, BDS basically said, like, we are taking a look specifically at Microsoft due to their, I think they have like AI, they have like tech deals and stuff with Israel. And I had not seen this until an article had come up on Aftermath talking about how the games industry itself and how games journalists should be handling this sort of thing. And at the end of the day, it is my job and it's our job as games media, you know, to discuss Microsoft products, Oblivion, Game Pass, South of Midnight, and Doom's coming out in a little bit. But I have a difficult time just accepting that as it is what it is, and there's nothing to be done about it. So for every single episode that we discuss Xbox products until this boycott is until we're told to that the boycott is over, we'll be donating $10 to Heal Palestine, which is an organization that helps school children and children in that area. So if that's something that you personally listening to this feel called to do as well, if you are a Game Pass subscriber or otherwise enjoy Xbox products like that, feel free to join us with that. But yeah, like I said, I think that this is a good way for us to be able to help with that sort of thing, and also be able to do our jobs and cover this sort of stuff. That all said, on Wednesday, I think, maybe it was Tuesday, there was a April 22nd. So that was, yeah, Tuesday of this past week. There was a presentation that basically said just like, hey, tune in. We're talking about a new game. And it was branded with Oblivion stuff. They do a showcase saying, hey, we have a remastered version of Oblivion, Elder Scrolls 4. And it's out right now. Go play it if you want. I was very graciously given a code for the PS5 version of the game. I know you downloaded the Xbox version, right?
Yeah.
It has scored an 82 on the Xbox Series X, an 80 on the PS5, and an 85 on the PC from Metacritic. Surprise drop. Oblivion is here. Justin, what do you think of that?
I think it's cool. I mean, I don't know where the place of the debate for this goes into, but like, I think this just, again, I want to really just smack my head against a wall. Not so much that I don't believe that this is in fact a remaster, but the fact that there's these categories of remake versus remaster, and everyone has a different idea about what that term actually means. And I think it's very confusing for a consumer to go out and buy things with that in mind. You know what I mean? Like what it actually means and what you're getting with it. But I think on top of all of that stuff, separating that kind of semantical argument about what this is, I think it's pretty cool that they've modernized this game to a certain degree, to a place that it has become something that people are experiencing en masse again, because I just think there is something special about some of the better Bethesda games, and it's cool that this is one that is the public conversation again.
Yeah. So it's really interesting, this whole like remaster versus remake debate, especially with this game, because I've seen a lot of people saying like, no, like Bethesda, Virtuos, and Xbox are incorrect. This is a remake. And I'm curious about the people saying that, because you said you haven't played it, right?
No, I have not.
Oh my fucking gosh. This is a remaster of a game from 2006. Holy shit. This is like, if someone looked at me and said like, no, this is a remake, I'd be like, did you play it? It is exactly the same as it was. There are a handful of things that are different. You can sprint now. That's kind of cool. But when you walk into the Imperial City, like the city, the capital, like all of the NPCs immediately start talking all at the same time at the same volume, and they all start their conversation at the exact same time. So it's just like, hello, hello, good weather we're having. What's going on? You're like all at the same time at the same volume, and they're just standing there. It like, it happens as soon as you walk in. So it like just, it cuts to like, it feels like the opposite of Toy Story, where like when Andy comes in the room and they all like drop on the ground, it's like the opposite, that they were all like lifeless, and then as soon as they see that you're here, they're like, oh, we have to be characters now, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's so funny. This is 100% that old game. There are some quality of life changes that have come with like leveling up and character build stuff. Like I said, they're sprinting now. They did some, there's some actually really cool impressive tech with the lip sync that they've done for it, where like they've made a lot of inhuman mouths like look like they're syncing properly to the things that they're saying.
That's really cool.
You know what I mean? With like the Argonians and the Khajiit, the cat people and stuff like that, like, which I think is a really, really difficult task, right? To be like, how does something that does not have the same like literal hardware that we have on our faces make it look like, so they're speaking like we do, you know, with lips and stuff like that. That stuff is really, really cool to me. But no, in playing this, I cannot believe that anyone thinks this is a remake based on just like how it plays, how it feels, what it is. Especially because in this like presentation that they did, they like very explicitly said like, hey, this is running Oblivion. Like the Oblivion, the original game from 2006, is the brain of this thing. We have just given it a new set of skin, you know? Set of skin, that's a weird way to say that, but you know what I mean, like fresh skin, because it looks good. But I mean, it plays exactly the same for the most part, and like it still like performs terribly. like anytime you go in anywhere, there's a great like breakdown in Digital Foundry about this, but like the game is basically, all games to my understanding are like sewn together in like different like zones, and when you travel through zones, that is when games tend to have like hitch and like issues, because like the game is loading a bunch of new assets in and stuff. And this game just does that every single time you go anywhere. Like as you're walking in the environment, there's just like that, like, and then it's all good. But yeah, I don't know. Like to me, this is 100% a remaster as opposed to a remake.
So I think, I mean, part of it, I it's like that porn thing. You don't know it till you see it kind of thing. Because, like, I think to me, it's not even so much about this game specifically. It's about, like, this culture of remake stuff that is very confusing. Yeah. I mean, we're even talking about the Days Gone remaster, right? Is that remaster or remake?
It's a remaster.
It's a remaster, right? That remaster is a very different remaster than the Oblivion remaster, in my opinion. Would you agree on that?
Not really, no. The Days Gone remaster exists to make it look better, right? And the Oblivion remaster largely exists to make it look better. And there are some quality of life improvements that they've made in the menus and stuff like that. But the difference here is that this is a remaster of a game that is almost two decades old versus a game that is 5 or 6 years old. Do you know what I mean? Oh. So like the UI in Days Gone doesn't need an improvement.
But it, to me, it's not the difference is how they remake those assets, because one is like pushing up sliders. The other one is like redesigning what dude looks like, even if that is still on the skull of what was before it. Cause they're all new assets in there.
That's what the Days Gone remaster would be as well.
They're new assets.
They would have new assets. I imagine it's like the Horizon Zero Dawn remaster has new assets. They have a different model for Aloy. That's a fully new asset. It's just slapped on top of the original game.
But I don't think that's, again, I might be misspeaking with Days Gone, but that's not what all remasters are.
Largely it is. Unless, what are your examples of that not being the case?
Well, I mean, a lot of these, like, PlayStation... So, okay, let's use Last of Us Part 1. What is that?
It's a remake.
Why are those different?
Than the remaster?
Yeah.
Because the remaster is a... takes every single thing that was... like, takes the original source code, and it puts a new, fresh coat of paint on it. Those assets and models do not look the same. They're different. All of the environments look completely different from the PS3 version of The Last of Us. The Last of Us Part 1 does a similar thing, but the technology behind it is different. Because, yes, it all looks completely different. It plays the same, but the reason it plays the same is because the document, like the source code and stuff like that, is so easily available to them. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
They set out to remake it. It does not share source code or things like that. There are some things that are shared. Like they didn't recapture like Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson for it. You know what I mean? Like, so they did reuse some assets and things like that, but it is not just a fresh coat of paint. They remade every single thing from the game versus the Last of Us remastered, which took the game and basically just exactly what you said, just like spiced up what it looks like.
But if you're designing new models for it, doesn't that change things? Because I guess I'm going to the Demon Souls thing, right?
Okay, but I think this is a better example.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think this the Last of Us is too granular.
Yeah. So isn't that though a remaster?
Technically, it is.
Right, but it goes. They went by a remake with it.
They call it a remake, and they. I think this is bad marketing and this is incorrect. This is a mistruth. If they say that the Demon Souls remake, and I know this because I literally wrote about this week, is a built from the ground up. It says that on the PlayStation Store. And that's not true. It's not built from the ground up. Bluepoint has spoken very explicitly and very clearly about that they use the original game as the source for how that game works. And that they basically even mentioned, like, what you could do is you could just remake it frame for frame exactly how it is. But that would be a lot of work and it would just not. And for what we are trying to do, it would not work for us. You think about like Silent Hill 2 remake. That is like kind of remade shot for shot. Right. Obviously, it's very different, though, where none of what the original game is in there. Demon's Souls is running the original game underneath the surface. It just has a fresh coat of paint on it. There are some new mechanics and things like that added to it. But kind of my sniff test for is this a remake or a remaster is there an exploitable glitch that works in both of them? And if the answer is yes, it is a remaster.
I think that makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know it's a weird thing, but like.
Unless they do it on purpose because they know it's like a foundational like glitch.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
100%.
Like that's like a stupid thing. But so I want to push back a little bit on on Days Gone a little bit. I'm on Tech Power Up right now about what they're talking about, what Ben's revealed, the new modes and content. They describe it built for the PS5. Days Gone Remastered has brought new life by the PS5 console featuring improved graphical fidelity, increased foliage draw distance, improved shadow and lighting quality. Then they talk about Tempest 3D Auto, VRR support, and more. Mm-hmm. For me, like, I still think there's this difference. And I'm not saying that the Oblivion thing is a remake. There's a difference in how things are upgraded when they have to remake new models versus making everything sharper, if that makes sense. Because I do not believe that in the same way the Oblivion models have been redone is the same way Days Gone models have been redone. I feel like the Oblivion thing is much more in line with Demon's Souls.
Well, but would you not say that, like, the reason that Days Gone does not need the same facelift that Oblivion needs is because games from 2019 look the same as games from 2025, largely?
But I don't think it matters the intent. It matters the execution for me, if that makes sense.
Right. But, like, so, like, obviously the visual difference between Oblivion 2006 and Oblivion Remastered, it's night and day. It's 20 years almost of, isn't that crazy? 20 years of graphical improvements and whatever versus, you know, graphical improvements from probably the same engine that Ben Studio is using for whatever they're working on now. You know what I mean? Like, it is going to be, like, the differences are going to be minute and minuscule, but they are going to be there.
Right, but I don't necessarily, to me though, even if they, because one is older, they have to remake the models, that's a different thing than fixing just graphical fidelity on a remaster.
Yeah, I would say that the Days Gone Remaster is probably closer to a port than anything, but, like, that said, I believe a port and a remaster are similar enough because they do change things, right?
Right. But they are different though, right?
What do you mean?
Like, it's still different. There's two separate delineations. Yeah, I mean,
a port would just be like, we got this game running exactly as it is on this new hardware.
But it might look it might even look better on the new hardware because they can do it a port, or no?
If it is exclusively just like, we are just moving this game from here to here, that is a port. That's it. If it is brought from here to here, you might call it a port, but if like minimal, like, stuff had been done to it, but if stuff had been done to it in any capacity, that is a remaster. So this feels like a port because the changes in it are so minuscule, but if they have changed anything to it, it is a remaster.
But I think what I'm thinking of here, and I think why this is like one of those things that people are debating, it's more of a remake, is because I think there is, like, I think remake, remaster is a broad term in general what they're saying. And I think it is not as clear as it being like, well, this is a remaster and this is a remake to people. And I think even companies, specifically Sony, I think is the bigger issue here.
Yeah, I agree.
I think bigger companies are making it more confusing with what you're getting in the box. And Sony's making it confusing too, because not only do they have their port remaster situation thing happening, but then they also have something like The Last of Us Part 1, which is, like, for all intents and purposes, the same game, even if it is completely new.
Yes, 100%.
But I think that's where the confusion is coming in between people when they're talking about this with what it is. And in our friend group, part of the issue that is happening is, should this be counted for Fantasy Critic or not? Because our league says that we can't. But I think that is a micro.
The crazy thing with that, though, is I'm like, it's called remastered.
Right, right.
Like, listen, we can have a semantic conversation about what is a remaster, what is a remake.
Right.
At the end of the day,
it's called a remaster.
Bethesda and Virtuous said, this is a remaster. We have to, like, abide by that, guys. Come on.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and then on top of that too, like, though, like, something like Demon's Souls, that one's a harder one because Demon's Souls is a new,
calls itself it's a remake, yes,
when it is not technically a remake, you know.
Correct. In the same way that Shadow of the Colossus was a remaster technically, but they called it a remake.
Right, exactly. Which is like, and that, and I think this all comes down to one thing. Sony.
No, 100%. Yes.
Yeah, like they're the ones making this confusing.
And then exactly what you're saying too, but like, oh cool, Last of Us Part 1 and also Until Dawn remake, it's just the same shit, but it's like based on, I mean, that's a remaster technically, but it changes enough that it's like, why would you make these changes? It's infuriating.
It is.
It's infuriating.
Bottom line, you playing this game.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I like Oblivion. I like hearing all the bad dialogue. I like hearing all of the characters spring to life as soon as you walk up. Like, I think that's fun. I like all that stuff. I like it. I think it's good. If you didn't like Oblivion back in the day, you're not going to like this. You know what I mean? If you don't like Skyrim, you're not going to like this. It's like Skyrim, but worse.
Yeah.
Like, I find that charming. But like, there's a lot of like, it's poorly designed. Not poorly designed, but like it's designed like it's from 2006. All of the caves are the exact same. They look the exact same. And you know how like in Skyrim, when you get to the end of a cave, you find like a treasure and then you usually find a way to like a secret, like a button that you hit and then it opens up a wall and it's like, oh my gosh, this leads you back to the entrance of the cave. Oblivion doesn't have that. Oblivion is you just like get to the end of the cave and there's nothing there. And you're like, I guess I'm just going to turn around and walk out the way I came.
Can you fast travel out?
No.
Good.
No,
good,
terrible.
Yeah, great.
But here's the thing. I'm saying that, and I'm like, you're gonna look at me and tell me that that's a remake, that someone made this and was like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much stuff that where it's like, no, if it was a remake, it would have fixed this.
Isn't it weird too? Like, you've played it more, so you know more of the changes or the things you probably don't even recognize are changes. What they decided was the thing they should change, and what the things that they decided to keep exactly the same.
The things they've changed is like two things.
Yeah.
And it's one, it's the visuals. And like, obviously that's the remastered part of it. And then the other part of it is how it leveling up works. It's just a lot more streamlined and easy. And I think the menus are different.
And did they also, they added an upgrade tree where you can dodge.
I did see this. Yes. Yeah. And they added sprinting. Okay. Fuck. It's a remake.
But like, those are the things. I think it's, to me, this seems like one of those games that when you're playing it, it seems more like how you remembered playing it rather than how you actually played it.
That is what a good remaster, in my opinion, does.
Right.
Yes. And the thing is, like, if you remade Oblivion, you would take out the things that make Oblivion so charming.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, like the terrible dialogue, you know, like the terrible voice acting and the terrible, like, stuff like that. That's what makes Oblivion fun and makes it like charming and fun. And if you got rid of that, because you would have to in a remake, because it's like, well, this is objectively bad, whatever that means. Like, you're getting rid of the thing that people like about Oblivion, you know? The caves suck and like the outposts kind of suck. But at the end of the day, like, that's kind of the fun part of it, is that like, you just like wander around, just throw a podcast on while I'm doing those, because like no story is happening in here. For me, what really makes the game come alive is like the fun quest design stuff. Like, for example, I'm in a town and I meet a guy, and the guy is basically like, hey, I need your help. Meet me behind the church at midnight. You show up and he's there and he's like, there are people who are spying on me every day and I need you to spy on them and let me know what you discover. You go and you talk to those people, and all the people have no idea who this guy is. They're just his neighbors. And they're like, oh yeah, he's kind of a weird guy, but he lives across the street, right? And you're like, yeah. And then you go back and you talk to him, and you can either be like, they don't know who you are, or you can be like, they are absolutely spying on you. And so that's what I did, because it's fun, you know what I mean? Like, because I'm just like, I'm gonna fuck with this guy, it's funny.
And what do you do?
It escalates, and then he basically tells you like, okay, the plan is in motion, I just need you to go fucking kill all these people. And
you killed him?
I did not do that.
You killed him.
I killed him instead. Okay. I broke into his house and I killed him.
Yeah, good.
It's fun. You know what I mean? That was my fun little end to that storyline. Like, there are a handful of ways it could have gone, but like, that's how I did it. And like, that to me is the really fun part of the game, because like, yes, it's janky and broken in all sorts of different ways, but like, that kind of quest is cute and it's fun. And it was fun to like participate in and be like, and to realize what's going on, that like, oh, none of these people know who this guy is. You know, but he's like obsessed and he's paranoid. I'm having a good time with it in that regard.
Dude, I'm going to be really interested in seeing you play Avowed, because one of the things when Avowed came out was they were a bunch of like videos were coming out about Avowed versus Oblivion, about how Oblivion was more advanced than Avowed in 2006 than Avowed is mm-hmm. in 2025. So I would be really interested to see, with it being as we saw it in our mind's eye, playing the remaster of Oblivion and seeing if truly the things that Avowed has been doing is worse than what Oblivion yeah. does today. You know what I mean?
Because 100%.
I kind of disagree with that very strongly, because I think they are doing different things as games, even though they're kind of, you know, similar looking and similar feeling. I think the two games are different from each other.
Yeah.
And I definitely would assume that Avowed is a more modern game than Oblivion, even today.
I have to imagine that it feels different.
Yeah, yeah.
like that it is, you know, that there is, of course, like, of course there is some things that one game does differently or better or whatever, but like at the end of the day, come on.
Yeah, do you remember in Metal Gear Solid 2 when you watched the ice long enough and it melted?
It like melts?
Man, no other game cool. does that. Metal Gear Solid 2 is better than everything else because of that.
And it's just like, yeah. Does that make a game good?
No, it's not doing anything like that. It's a one person.
It reminds me of, what's the game? Insomniac made it and it's not Spider-Man. It's about Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. People were complaining that like when like you just like clip through the foliage in that game, and yeah. it's like, who fucking cares?
Yeah,
like what? Literally does not matter at all.
Well, it's okay, not realistic, Peter.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm playing as a wombat. What are they called? Wombats.
Wombax. Yeah.
Yeah. Oblivion Remake. I am having a fun time with it, but it is like 100% still that game.
Yeah.
100% still that game. And that's why like I have a difficult time when people are like, I can't tell if it's a remake or a remaster. I'm like, play it. You will not be like, this feels like a game that was supposed to come out this year, which is kind of what remakes are, right? Like they update to bring it into the current era. And it's like, that is not what this does. this is not what this is. There you go. Justin, we talked about this last week. Claire Obscure Expedition 33, terrible name, but it's out now. Everywhere you can play it on Game Pass, you can play it on the PlayStation, you can play it on PC. Review scores are out. 93 on the Xbox Series X, 90 on the PC, 92 on the PS5. This is the best rated game of the year so far, I believe. Justin, it's pretty good. Pretty good game.
How much more have you played since our last discussion?
So I was at like 4 hours last we talked. I am, I think, around 8 now. I'm substantially into this game. I like it a lot. I think this game has like taken over the internet. Have you like been like privy to any of this?
A little bit. I mean, I've definitely seen that. I don't know if it's them being marketed by whomever they're marketing, or like people are just talking about it, but it seems to be like covered everywhere.
A lot of people are, I'm trying to think of how I want to say this. It's a good game. It's a great game, even. Play it. The reaction that people have had to this game blows my mind a little bit. It has a really, really, really good opening sequence. Really great opening sequence. In my opinion, the game has peaked after its opening sequence. The rest of it's really good, but it is not as good as that opening sequence. And so I think a lot of people played the intro and then flocked over to Metacritic to leave a 10 out of 10 review and be like, I can't believe how good this is. And it's like, it is good. You should play more of it because it gets stupid. I don't mean that negatively. It's still good. But like, I've seen a lot of people just like immediately like play this thing for an hour and a half and be like, I can't believe how good, it's the best game ever made. It's the best game of the year. And like, play it, finish it, guys, finish it, please. Oh my gosh, finish it. You know? And then sort of on top of that, there's a lot of, you have a lot of people saying like Claire Obscure Expedition 33 has revived the turn-based RPG. And it's like coming from people who don't play turn-based RPGs, and like Metaphor, Persona 3 Reload, Baldur's Gate 3, Bravely Default 2, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like it's a lot of people saying like, I can't believe that like turn-based RPGs aren't made anymore. And then like, look at how good this is. And it's like, they are being made at a rate which you cannot possibly comprehend. Oh my gosh. Every single day there's a new turn-based critically acclaimed JRPG coming out. You know what I mean? And so like, it feels weird to like have to like cuff my praise for this game to say like it's good, but it's like there's just so much hype surrounding this game that it feels like it's, if you go into it with that expectation, I think you're going to be disappointed a little bit. It's really good, but is it like that good? I don't know. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you in terms of the fact that like there are other games out there and other better things out there. But I think this is like one of those anomaly games that for whatever reason is a quality game. Correct. Right. You would say it's quality. I haven't played it.
It's good.
I mean,
it's great.
I have a download I want to play, but I haven't played it yet. But like the idea that
I think you'll like it.
This is a quality game that has somehow penetrated the mainstream in a way that most good games don't always do. And by mainstream, I mean even just kind of like mainstream, like TikTok and all these like things that videos are happening about it. And I think it's also probably helped a little bit by the celebrities behind it. A little bit.
You got
like,
Charlie Cox and
Even what's her face? Like people who like Baldur's Gate, which I think was one of those kind of like games like that. Like she's in it and like people
Jennifer
can like, whatever it is. But like
both of them,
it's just to that point where it has hit that thing where it's people, enough big celebrities are talking about it and enough coverage is happening about it. And I think the combat enough, if I'm correct, like I don't want to diminish the combat. It reminds me a little bit of like Paper Mario and the Thousand Year Door kind of active style turn-based combat, right?
So that's the thing, is everyone saying like, I've never seen combat like this before. And I'm like, you have, we all have, I'm going crazy.
But I think on top of that, it is because it's one of those things that became mainstream enough that like a new group of people are coming in after maybe playing Pokemon when they were kids. And now they're playing 100%. This, and this is not Pokemon. I mean, Pokemon itself bores me sometimes when I'm playing those combat encounters a little bit. So like, I think it's just one of those things at right place, right time. Not the fact that it's not a good game or not. I just think it's one of those things that people have gotten their nose in the door for something like this. And now that they're here, they're like, maybe I actually do like what's happened to this genre instead of what they thought it used to be.
I think without question, you are correct. That it's just like it broke in a way. And I think part of why it broke the way it did is because of how good his introduction is. It starts and it's like, damn, this is fucking good. Like the acting's great. Like the visuals are great. Like the writing here is like really good. Like it just starts and you're like, wow, that's really good. And then you get into the combat and you're like, oh, and the combat's like really good too. You know what I mean? So like the first like 2 hours of it are like fucking phenomenal. I'm not saying it's bad, but I am saying like it does not maintain that for the rest of its time. And I think that because it is so good at the beginning and you've got people trying it out on Game Pass and stuff like that, and you just have like all of this word of mouth surrounding it, and then you start it up and you're like, it is that good. Oh my gosh, it's really, really good. That is what, like, there's like this perfect storm of like discourse surrounding it to generate hype and excitement. But at the same time, like someone who's a little, like I'm a little bit removed from that because I've been playing it a little bit more and I'm further ahead than some people are. I'm like, it's good, but it's like, hold on, like, is it the best game of the year already? I don't know about all that.
Can I create a hypothesis and you tell me if I'm true or not? Is part of the hypothesis too that there's a little bit of that get good mentality in this game? Because while it is turn-based, there is the parry system, which seems to be a pretty significant system that you have to work on your timing with.
100%. So that's the other part of this, that like the mainstream gamer bro people are like interested in this because it is not just a turn-based RPG.
Yeah.
Because it has that active time, but you have to parry. You have to parry, otherwise you can't beat the game. And because it has that bit of it, it means that like it does appeal to the like active time combat crowd, because it's not just standing around waiting to hit. You know what I mean? Like
but,
it gives
like,
you something to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So 100%. And like I feel bad again. Like I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying that any of that. I'm saying it is good, but I'm also saying that like I think that like the way this game blew up is just like really surprising to me, because it is just this weird storm of like all these people being like, I can't believe turn-based RPGs don't come out like this anymore. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they do.
Yeah.
Like they so do. They so absolutely do. Or it's like everyone saying like, oh my gosh, like we've never had turn-based combat like this. I'm like, Paper Mario, Mario and Luigi series. Like there's another one that's similar kind of like thing, you know, and it's just a little just like, all right, guys, like I think if it's okay, if you say like, I haven't played a turn-based video game since Final Fantasy X in 2001. This is crazy good. You can say that instead of saying like, Clear Obscure just put Final Fantasy, it's fucking Grave. And you're like, have you played any of them? Like, they're different now.
Are you required to grind in this game?
No, you can very easily get overleveled.
And I think that is also part of it too, because I think one of the barriers to metaphor is the game is hard, not because the game itself, like the combat mechanics are hard. Part of the thing is that you can really easily become underleveled if you're not careful, and you have to find 100%. Ways to kind of like, I don't want to say cheese the system, but like find ways to cheese the system to like grind out to like be a better level. And I think that is something that is inherently not like a mainstreamy like thing that people like to do as much. The kind of funny people we're just talking about, Snowbike Mike just beat Final Fantasy X for the first time.
Okay.
And like part of the thing was like before you beat the final boss, you have to grind for like 3-4 hours. Is that fun?
No. Right. I mean, that's an old school RPG thing.
Like, well, and part of the grinding he had to do, too, was like do a lot of the side quests and the legendary missions and stuff like that, which he was just trying to mainstream the story. And like, if you do that, of course, you're going to get to a point where you're in a bad spot. But like, that's.
Yes. Well, that's what the game is. I worry that people are hearing this and they're like, oh, Clair Obscur is not that good. Peter is being a contrarian, and I'm not. It's a good game. I really like it. I really, really like it. It's just like, is it a game that's going to demolish every other video game for the rest of the year? I don't think so. I think it's going to be well remembered. I'm going to like it. I'm sure it's going to be in my top 10. But like, oh my gosh, everyone. Whoa. Play the game. Play it a little bit more. Play it a little bit more. And then, you know.
Yeah. We can talk. I would say, too, it's just funny, too. Like, sometimes discourse is something no one can predict or control. And like, it's just. Love it. I love this industry.
It's odd. It's odd. But there you go. Clair Obscur Expedition 33. I will continue telling you about it as I get further into it. I think so far it takes some swings. And that's that. Justin, let's talk about the news.
Woo!
The one big story I want to talk with you about today, Justin. Switch pre-orders went live on Tuesday.
No, they didn't.
They did. It's almost been a whole week since then. Can you believe that? And by that, I mean, it's been 4 days.
oh my God. Time flies.
And it really does. 11 p.m. rolls around. You and I are on a phone call. Refreshing, refreshing, refreshing. You get through. You've purchased a Switch 2 with Mario Kart.
Ooh.
Through where? Was it Target?
Walmart.
Walmart. I'm in a queue. I've also like I've sort of accepted as it was like an hour of me just sitting here refreshing. I wasn't having a bad time because we were chatting, whatever. And then it was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to call this pretty soon. Like, I'll be able to get one of these eventually. Like, it just might not be tonight, you know? And then all of a sudden my Walmart queue goes through. Check out with the Switch 2 with Mario Kart attached to it. I'm excited. We both got a Switch 2. What did you think of the process this time?
I'm gonna be honest, I don't remember staying up for one of these for a while. Like, when it released like this, I mean, this was like a midnight thing. It did kind of feel a little special, you know what I mean? Like, you're
it was kind
there.
Of fun.
Yeah, and I always find it's fun to be in the hunt. I remember for PS5, I didn't get the initial like thing, but then I was like in the now in stock queue, and eventually I think I actually got it through PlayStation through like a specific like a specific thing. The Switch I got a little bit after the fact. I didn't get it at launch, but it was something that I was able to get a few days after launch when it happened. Oh, no, actually, I don't even think I bought it on launch. I think I bought it like later on in Christmas. But like, this is something like the hunt of finding something like this is always like a little bit fun. And I know people said it was a hot mess online. I was looking at a lot of the discourse about like things crashing and stuff like that, but it's always like that. Like, it's not like this is anything new or crazy. This is what it's like.
And I was surprised, too, that Walmart seemed to have it figured out by just giving you a queue.
Right.
And they're like just sitting here and like they kind of give you an update. They updated you basically saying like, hey, it'll be about 10 minutes until you can, you know, check out. And then when you do, you'll have about 10 minutes to, you know, do your thing. And then mine basically just said like, hey, you probably aren't getting this just as an FYI. And they said, like, you can still hang out if you want to. We'll let you know if it sells out. But, like, you know, probably not. And then it just went through. And I thought that was the best system as opposed to like just refreshing on Target and like, just like, it's like in my cart, but it's not in my cart. It's in my cart. It's not in my cart. Like that sort of thing. I mean, like it was messy if you were going through those, you know, it was messy for sure. But like Walmart was pretty simple with this sort of thing.
Well, and I think a lot of it's about like diversification of where you're going to, because not everyone had the same experience. Like where did where was your homepage on when you started this process? Were you on Walmart to start or were you on a different page?
First I was on GameStop and I was like, I got GameStop open and you were like, hey, that's not,
it's not right now. It's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Yeah. It's tomorrow at 11 a.m. I was like, cool. I did know that. I knew that for sure. I went GameStop.
Yeah.
No, not GameStop. Best Buy.
Best Buy.
And then I pulled up Walmart because I was like, I had some luck here with the PS5. I bought my brother a PS5 as a housewarming gift because he owns a house now. And I was like, now that you have a house, you have some place to put this thing. Because God knows you can't get it through the door of an apartment.
It's hard. Up the stairs. You can't bring that thing up the stairs.
Yeah. So I got that for him through Walmart. And I was like, you know, well, I had some decent luck with them. I like did it like pretty quick, too. And this was like in the height of it all. And I downloaded the Target app because Wario64 was like, hey, Target app might be like kind of the way to go because they're saying they're out of stock on the website, but on the app, like, you know, people are getting them in carts and having some success. But yeah, I didn't feel like it was like this huge giant mess in the way that I felt like the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X was kind of a giant.
Yeah. Hot mess. Yeah. And like, even on top of that too, like Target was like immediately didn't work for me. I think once it was like 2 minutes before 11 when they went live at night.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't on Target. It's because the page was just crashed.
It just crashed. However, my brother-in-law was able to get on there exactly at 11 and without any issues. And I mean, he's even in the same like time zone area as me. It's not like it was like a different like regional thing. He was able to get it. And then my sister was able to also additionally get one in the cart. They didn't end up buying two, but like they were able to do that kind of stuff just because that was what their luck was. And sometimes it's as simple as like being in the kind of right position to be in the queue when you need to be in the queue and stuff like that. But I think that's part of what this is like. I hear people often liken this to like pre-ordering shoes because shoe culture is all obviously very much like this. Even going to Taylor Swift concerts and stuff like that was one of those things. Like when that happened, any big concert like that, to get tickets right away before anyone else can be like a very complicated process. It's just one of these things of life. And I don't know how to do it better because you can't have a world where everyone can be on the internet at the same time and assume that there's going to be enough of these items for every single person at the same time to order something without crashing a website or selling out of the amount that they have or anything like that. Like it's just part of the world that we live in right now. People used to wait in Black Friday times for these games. Now they are waiting in queues online and hoping they get it. And you could wait in a line at Black Friday and still not get the thing you're there for. Just all is part of the experience.
Yeah.
And I do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I really liked, it was fun talking to you and I was like texting with my brother-in-law and a couple other friends throughout the night too. It just made it feel like I was actually at a place instead of like, I was just sitting at my computer.
To me, that's the difference where it's like, it was a shit show for like Black Friday stuff or like midnight releases of stuff sometimes. But at the end of the day, like there was like this like sense of like camaraderie and like community. Yeah. And so it was fun. Like we were on the phone together, we were texting, whatever. And like, that was fun. But like, I would have loved to like meet up in person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like wait for something like this. Yes. And even if it is like hectic and like all this stuff and you're up late and whatever, to me, that is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know. All in all, I'm not that like, I got one. It seems like everyone I know who wanted one ended up getting one either that night or in the following days. It's going to be delivered to me while I'm at Summer Game Fest. So I was hoping to have that in hand. I knew it was not likely, but I was hoping like, oh, it'd be cool to like play Mario Kart on the plane. But now I'll just have to wait.
So it's being delivered to my mom's house because I will also be out of there, which kind of sucks. It's going to be on a trip, which is the perfect time to have played a portable system or whatever.
Yep.
But it'll be delivered to my mom's. I'll be home for my trip and then I can separate church and state and have a good trip and then an introduction to my Switch at the same time. So that will be fine. But it's just part of the unfortunate timing of the world, but I still am going to get one and my mom hopefully will not open it up and start playing it before I do. Do you think there's going to be any issues with the Switch online crashing with everyone trying to be on it at like the launch day and like download Mario Kart and like all this stuff?
I don't know. Have they had issues with that in the past? I don't know.
I don't know, but I don't like, remember the. But like, I think specifically with this, like Mario Kart, I'm sure you can buy the cartridge of it, but most of these pre-orders are digital copies that people are going to be getting. So it's going to require more people to go online for this stuff. And it's not like a lot of this stuff is like physical release for this beginning thing. A lot of people are going to be on the store downloading stuff. So I would assume it's going to be an influx of people on the online store. And I don't know if it's going to be exactly new or not, but it would just seem to me that that could be a potential worry for me about that day one. I get my fancy new Switch and I can't play anything because... well, I can play old cartridge games, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you're still going to have to download stuff,
right? Yeah, I would assume. So, like, I don't know. It would just be an interesting thing to see if that's going to be a worry. But guess what, Peter? I don't have to fucking worry about that because I'm going to be in a different state.
That's the thing. It's like, for me, like...
watch it burn.
I'm not gonna be around.
I'll love it too because I'll just be able to, like, you know, watch it happen from a distance as everyone's doing that dog in the burning house meme.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I don't know. I it seems like the people who got them that wanted them got them. And I'm happy for those people, and I'm happy for us that we were able to grab them. I'll say this as well. I saw a lot of people online. I wrote an article about this because if there's a video game opinion to be had, I need to write about it now. A lot of people are being like, you critique the prices and yet you bought a Switch. And it's like, I did. Yes. Because two things can be true at once. That you cannot be happy about it, and also accept, like, this is the only reality in which I can play this game.
Yeah, like, what's the option to not buy? It's too much money. I'm not going to buy it and then never play it. It's not like that. It's like
I am irritated that prices have gone up.
Yeah.
In all aspects of my life. But let's talk about video games specifically. I'm irritated because the only reason I was able to purchase this was because of my tax return. Otherwise, I would have had to wait.
Yeah.
That said, this might be the cheapest that the Switch is because console manufacturers have made it very clear in fine print and also in through their actions that these can increase in price. So, you know, maybe we're saving $20, maybe we're saving $50, whatever. But also I'm irritated because I think games should be for everyone. And up until very recently, they kind of have been in terms of being like relatively affordable, right? I'm not saying obviously everyone can afford them, but like they are like the Switch at $300 is relatively affordable. You know what I mean? In games, you can get them used, you can get them, you know, by indie, like, relatively affordable, or even, you know, if you're saving up for first party games, whatever. It is true that I can be irritated that it costs so much and also say, but I want to play it and I have the money from, you know, this, that, or whatever, so I did buy it. You cannot vote with your wallet against Nintendo, because to vote with your wallet means that you have to have other things to vote for, and you don't. The only vote you can do is to buy or to abstain. And if you abstain, you are not having an audience with Nintendo, because the Switch 2 was going to be successful no matter what.
Okay, so the thing that I think I can understand, like, it felt like to me video games were moving in a direction of becoming more for everyone, like, in terms of, like, its prices and stuff like that, as, like, the price of games and inflation actually started to do the thing where they start to, oh, they're actually here, right?
Like, oh, $60 for games. Yeah, like,
it's a pretty good deal. But I think the big issue with the Switch 2 is that the Switch 2 is the handheld portable option from Nintendo.
Right.
And those have always been affordable. I was able to, in 2001, I was 11 fucking years old. I was able, out of my own pocket money, my allowance money, whatever I had saved and scrapped, to buy the Game Boy Advance at launch myself.
Because what was that, $150?
It was $100.
$100, yeah.
Right? Like, I could not be the kid at 11 years old buying a Switch 2 out of my own allowance, saving, and whatever money.
No. And also, we talked about this too. Like, okay, so now for Christmas, you're getting the Switch for, you know, for your kid or whatever, and you are getting one game. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Because, like, you know, that's just what it is, and that's okay. You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, where
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
Like, it is so much more expensive now to just engage with games as a hobby, and especially if you have children, to introduce them to games as a hobby, because they're gonna play one game and be like, oh, I want to try more games. And it's like,
and people wonder why so many of these kids play things like Fortnite and League and all these kind of things, because they are free. And as a parent at that time, like I can't, like I will fortunately be enough to have all these in my house because this is a hobby that I like to do. So my kids will have that,
yeah.
But there'll be that awkward age when they're able to have their own little console and they want to play and I want to play. It's already like inconvenient enough for my life when my wife is playing Power Washing Simulator when a new Game Pass game is out and I want to play the Game Pass game, but I can't because she's playing Power Wash Simulator. And like, I'm not going to like be mean to her about it. Cause like, I love that she's playing video games. So like if I'm already having a slight conflict with my wife who plays one, you know, once a month, what is it going to be like when I want to have my kid to, you know, be engaged in video games and play them with me?
100%.
So I can 100%. Pwn them at Mario Kart.
Yeah, just demolish it. Yeah. Just kick their ass.
Yeah,
smash.
That's why you have kids, you know?
Yeah, hold the controller. I'm going to fucking demolish you. It is just this frustrating thing where people are like, and yet you bought a Switch. And it's like,
you're missing the point, buddy.
You're missing the point. And if the Switch was something you were interested in, you would have bought it too. If you had the money. And there's, and it's like this thing where like multiple things can be true at once, where you can be irritated that it costs that much and also accept like, but I'm going to buy it because there is no, like, there's no other option for this, you know?
The world isn't binary. There's always a gray area and there's a confusing thing. And sometimes that gray area makes you do things that you're not necessarily proud of, but like sometimes you got to do that.
And also it's this thing too, where like it makes sense on paper of this whole, like, vote with your wallet, don't support it if you don't want it. But it's like, but that actually doesn't work based on how the system we have is set up, you know? So Justin, I think that's going to do it for us today. A little bit of a shorter episode because we're talking about The Last of Us. There's as usual, there's a Last of Us spoiler discussion also up on this feed. If you're interested in that, you can find us there. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer. You can follow us on Blue Sky at hitboxpod. You can not follow us on Twitter because we don't do that anymore. You can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. You can join our Discord server. Link to that description of this episode. Am I missing anything, Justin?
Not a single thing.
Let's talk Last of Us. Bye. Oh, always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.